Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
We move next to the report by Brando Benifei and Dragos Tudorake on Artificial Intelligence Act. We vote on the provisional agreement. Amendment 808 by roll call. Vote is open.
13th of March, 2024, Strasbourg. The President of the European Parliament, Roberta Metsola, is about to announce the approval of the AI Act, the first artificial intelligence regulation in the world. This is the last Parliament session before the European election, but probably one of the most memorable of this legislative term.
Vote is closed. And it is adopted. Congratulations on this seminal work. Congratulations. First reading of Parliament is closed.
Dragos Tudorake, one of the co-rapporteurs, retrieves his mobile phone to capture a photo showing the distribution of votes. Then he gazes at the other co-rapporteur, Brando Benifei, and raises his thumb in a gesture of triumph. The support from the hemicycle is resounding. 523 votes in favour out of 618 cast. If you look at them together, these two MEPs seem very different. Dragos Tudorake, 49, is Romanian, representing the Liberal Renew Europe group and is a former Interior Minister of Romania. Brando Benifei, 38, is Italian and represents the group of the Progressive Alliance of Socialists and Democrats. He was one of the youngest Italian MEPs ever elected. But these kinds of unlikely alliances are very common in the European Parliament. Together, they have just made history in the world of AI. Regulators worldwide will look at their text for inspiration. Welcome back to Euronews Tech Talks, the podcast delving into the digital, technological and scientific landscape shaping Europe. I'm your host, James Thomas, and this is a special episode where we meet the authors of the world's first AI regulation. The law, set to take effect next year, will regulate generative AI models like OpenAI's ChatGPT, requiring them to mitigate risks and implement cybersecurity measures. Let's explore the behind the scenes of writing the text and its impact on our lives. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman hinted last year that ChatGPT might leave Europe if it couldn't follow the AI Act. Spoiler alert, he changed his mind. Major tech companies usually agree that AI needs regulation, but they also try to make sure the rules benefit them when they lobby for them. Let's hear what some of the leading European voices in privacy and data protection think about the EU AI Act.
Artificial Intelligence Act was making quite a lot of doubts in the data protection community. I have to say that I was quite pessimistic about this legal idea, because I thought that while there are probably some gaps as far as the liability is concerned, actually the General Data Protection Regulation is solving all the problems connected with the processing of personal data by the artificial intelligence.
This is Wojciech Wierowski, the European Data Protection Supervisor.
But I have to say that the approach which was taken by the Commission, connected with the question of the security of the product and the market surveillance of the product and services on the market, was the one which I liked and which addressed the fact that despite the 80% of artificial intelligence solutions will be actually neutral towards the human rights and towards the data protection rights as well, there might be this 20% at the moment they are placed on the market, the kind of surveillance has to be done.
Agnès Diallo is the head of EULISA, the European Union agency responsible for managing large-scale IT systems related to freedom, security and justice within the EU.
We received the AI Act in a very positive manner. I personally understand, and I'm very prone to being able to implement it. I think it will advance the cause of safeguarding data protection and data security for the EU citizens. And we're already working on making sure that it's implemented across all of our systems, whether the ones that are older, I would say the ones that we have inherited that are first-generation systems, or the ones we are building right now and we plan to build in the future.
How does the AI Act work? The AI Act takes a risk-based approach to products or services that make use of artificial intelligence. This means the riskier the AI application, the more scrutiny it undergoes. Low risk, most AI systems like content recommendation or spam filters. High risk, AI uses, such as in medical devices or critical infrastructure. Some AI applications are completely banned due to the unacceptable risks they pose, such as social scoring systems or certain predictive policing methods.
When the precogs declare a victim and a killer, their name is embedded in the grain of wood. Since each piece is unique, the shape and grain is unique. The shape and grain is impossible to forge.
I'm sure you all understand the legalistic drawback to pre-crime methodology.
Here we go again.
Look, I'm not with the ACLU on this, Jeff. But let's not kid ourselves. We are arresting individuals who have broken no law.
But they will.
This is supposed to avoid a dystopian Minority Report scenario, among others.
You're talking about predetermination, which happens all the time.
Additionally, using AI-powered facial recognition for public surveillance by police is banned, except in cases of serious crimes like kidnapping or terrorism. And which category applies to generative AI? Well, developers of general AI, from startups to big players like OpenAI and Google, must summarize and comply with EU copyright law for the data used to train their systems. Deepfake content must be labeled, and extra scrutiny is given to major AI models like OpenAI's GPT-4 and Google's Gemini due to their potential risks. This risk-based approach is in line with many EU regulations such as GDPR, the EU's Data Privacy and Protection Law, another world first. Let's now listen to the authors, Dragos Chudareke and Brando Benife.
When did you know you needed to work on this report? So AI was really unknown, and especially the consequences. So how did you put together the information? How did you do the research?
Well, I think it's a false impression, which in fact we have seen quite a lot working on this file, that the work on the EU level on AI started with the proposal made by the Commission in 2021. But it's not the case. First, the Commission had a high-level expert group on AI looking already into the implications, the potential risks and concerns related to the application of AI in our societies and economies already before 2019. And then in 2019 came the first announcement from President von der Leyen that there will be a legislative proposal on artificial intelligence that would come soon. On our side as Parliament, we saw that coming already in 2019. We started preparing for that. Then in 2020, there was the decision to establish a special committee on artificial intelligence. Both of us were part of that committee. In fact, all of the shadow reports that worked on the legislative file were part of that committee. I chaired the committee. And already during the works of that committee in 2020, all the way to 2021, we started unpacking a bit the concept of artificial intelligence, its implications, its potential, but also its potential risks. So we were, in fact, quite well prepared in understanding artificial intelligence and what we had to do by the time the Commission put the proposal forward in 2021.
That was before the launch of ChatGPT. So how did the launch of ChatGPT impact the work you were doing already?
Well, the explosion of the generative AI has impacted on our work because the original text of the European Commission was not so much deep on the issue of general purpose AI and the generative AI. Then this became a crucial point, and in fact the Parliament especially, and to a little extent also the Council, so the member states with which we negotiated the final text in these last months, have taken care of that and have prepared rules for the general purpose AI and for generative AI, especially concentrating on the issue of transparency. Transparency for the downstream operators, transparency for the recognizability of AI-generated content, and transparency for the copyright protection to support authors and creatives in the legitimate use of their content to train the algorithms. So we can say that the aspect of generative AI is the symbol of the power of the European Parliament if it's able to stick together, to work together. Because in fact, we can say that this part that is in the regulation has been heavily shaped by the work of the Parliament that, as it was said, has arrived to this work after a long path of discussion, of exchange with all the stakeholders in the field.
And to get to the final text, I imagine you have many disagreements. So I want to know one of the first things that you strongly disagree, and by the end of it, you found an agreement.
This thing that was mentioned by Brando, the issue of generative AI and foundation models, as we call them, was one area where I wouldn't say disagreement, but where we started from different negotiating positions. On one hand, as was explained, this was something that we in Parliament already had included in our mandate, and we had crafted a special regime for foundation models, whereas the Commission didn't have anything in the initial proposal, and the Commission had a very limited application to some general purpose AI systems. So that was a very intense negotiation to find the right balance between, on one hand, the interest to protect transparency, to protect the rights of copyright holders in the situations where their work would be used in the training of algorithms, and at the same time, a very legitimate argument and objective of not putting unnecessary barriers and burdens for those that are creating, that are developing applications in the area. And I believe that in the final negotiation, we managed to find that balance. I think the text recognizing both the fact that it is a nascent technology, that we still have to learn many aspects about how it works, and also to measure, in fact, the obligations, including transparency that I mentioned earlier. So that is why we allowed for the concept of code of practices that would be developed together by the industry and the future regulator, while at the same time fixing very clearly what we believed were essential elements of accountability and responsibility for the developers of this kind of technology. So that was one of the big discussion points in the negotiations. The other one was around biometrics and law enforcement. But you asked me for one, so this was one.
Maybe I can mention the other sticky point in the last stretch of the negotiations, which we knew from the beginning was going to be difficult. It was the balance between protection of fundamental rights through the choice of even banning some of the use cases, and the need to not constrain technologies that we know only partially. So we tried to keep a clear line where we see an excessive and unbearable, we say, risk to health, safety and fundamental rights. We chose to be strong in taking a clear decision of banning a use case in Europe. This was already in the Commission proposal, but the Parliament proposed to strengthen some of these bans. And in fact, the final negotiation was a lot about this, and I would say that if you read the original text of the Commission, the text of the Parliament, the text of the Council, and in the end, the final text of this law, you see that the Parliament has won a lot of its positions that were of more restriction in some areas that we thought were dangerous. One of them is the use of biometric cameras in public spaces for surveillance. We have limited this use in real time only for the pursuing of suspects of very significant crimes, so a small list of that. And not allowing it, so the misuse of this technology for putting all citizens into surveillance. But we also banned emotional recognition in workplaces and in schools because we do not want an employer to use this system to try to understand if the employee is angry with him. This is something we do not think has space in Europe, as well as the predictive policing so that we can predict that a single person will have this percentage of committing a crime in the next month, which would be completely against any principle of presumption of innocence and the rule of law. So we have been carving out some specific use cases where we wanted to ban the use in Europe. And this was difficult to find an agreement, especially because ministers of interior in many member states wanted more free hand for policing and security uses of these kind of systems, while we think that we should be very careful, and we have put also judicial control over some of the exceptions to these bannings, because we want to be very clear, the government not to control on itself and be able towards the citizens to have the certainty that AI is used when dealing with very sensitive issues in a very careful way with a lot of safeguards.
What is the capacity of this legislation to evolve since the access to this technology is accelerating and we've seen risks this year that we didn't know the previous year, for example, with deepfakes? We did an episode about these girls that were deepfaked, so they looked, they were like naked, and it was their peers who did it because it was very easy to access an app and very cheap to create it. So how this technology can adapt to this changing ecosystem?
Of course, this was one of the first questions that we asked ourselves. When you endeavor, like we did, to put a framework around the technology, and there's always the question, how do you future-proof it? How do you make sure that a technology that is bound to evolve, and particularly this one is bound to evolve even faster than any other technology that we've known so far, how do you make sure that the rules that you put in place are going to stay relevant in 1 year's time, in 2 years' time, or even longer? We've taken two approaches here. One is to make sure that the obligations, the frameworks for compliance that we have put in place are technology neutral. In other words, in the way we define the obligations, in the way we define the steps and the processes that we have to go through, they would be irrelevant as to the evolution of technology. I'll give you an example. If you define obligations of transparency, those obligations will stay true no matter how complex the algorithms would become, no matter how big the data sets that they used in training. The obligation to be transparent, to reveal the data that you use to train will remain stable, will remain the same, doesn't have to be adapted. At the same time, we realize that certain parts of the text, the ones that are technical in their description, or the ones that are referring to criteria that are used to differentiate between algorithms, like we did for the foundation model chapter, they are not neutral from a technology point of view. They are related to how the technology will evolve. And therefore, we have deliberately introduced their mandates for the Commission and the future AI office to introduce changes via a lighter procedure, which we call comitology, so that together with the scientific board, which the future AI office will have, which will bring the necessary reality checks from how the technology evolves, what is the scientific community's views of those evolutions, that they can constantly adapt and therefore keep the text in tune with what happens in reality. And if we are to only use this example that you mentioned with the deepfakes, not to mention that deepfakes as such are already covered in the text, so they are going to be subject to strict accountability once the rules will come into force. But even so, whatever new uses would arise with new risks that might occur, they can always be added to Annex 3, which is the list of high-risk applications of artificial intelligence, which we have, which is also deliberately left open in order to adapt it and to add new use cases of artificial intelligence that might prove risky in the future.
And this law is pioneer in the world, so I was wondering how it's influencing other regions in order to regulate it. For example, one of the red lines is to use algorithms to predict criminality, and I know in the US they are using them. So if you had other regions that approach you to find inspiration.
For sure, if we look at the prohibitions, for example, and so the use in certain areas related to security, if you do not choose to have a mandatory legislation like the one we are having now with the AI Act, it's difficult to pursue this choice. The rest of the world for now has chosen to go for voluntary legislation, so soft laws and recommendations, codes of conduct, or to use some executive power that covers only partially the context. It's the example of the executive order of Biden, on which we can see, in my view, the influence of the debate also sparked by the AI Act, because the Biden executive order deals with risk management and also with the most powerful models. And these are issues that we have been dealing extensively in the AI Act, because the truth is that our act is not inventing anything. It is putting in a systemic context and with clear rules, existing practices of risk minimization and reflections that are ongoing regarding the safety of the most powerful models and their impact of generative AI on certain sectors and on disinformation and on the protection of copyright, for example. So we are putting in a law something that is being debated also globally, and we hope that our choice to put this in an actionable legislative act that it can protect more effectively consumers, citizens, workers, businesses, institutions, can be an example for the rest of the world. It will contribute to the ongoing debate which is happening in various fora, but I can also say that we know that the AI Act will not be sufficient to deal with the so-called global systemic risks for the worries that we have at the global level on the impact of AI on global security threats, the weaponization of AI, the cybersecurity at a global level, the risk of losing control of AI. These debates exist, and we know this is something that must be treated at an international level, in the international fora. But our text, our law that will apply for the Union, which is one of the most important markets in the world, if not the most important, will impact all this discussion, and it's already doing it.
I only have one question left, so I want you to mention some concrete areas in which a European citizen, because he's living in a EU country, is safer than another citizen in face of the advance of AI.
Well, there are many, many examples. Any of the use cases that are in Annex 3 are linked to real-life situations. It's banking, it's insurance, it's health sector, it's critical infrastructure, it's education, it's migration, it's border management. So all of those use cases, they mean, because they are in there, a safer context for European citizen compared to any other. So if I go to a bank or if I go to an insurance company and I ask for a quote and there is an algorithm that is going to give me one credit rate and to my neighbor another, because I am in Europe, I will have the assurance that that algorithm does not discriminate me on the basis of any criteria, because there has been an obligation for transparency on behalf of those that have developed, as well as the banking institution or the insurance institution or the education institution that is choosing to deploy that algorithm in real life. So I will have that guarantee, that assurance that there is no discrimination, that there is no bias, no prejudice against me when I'm interacting with technology. And I think that's a very important gain for the European citizen compared to any citizens anywhere around the world.
We want to ensure that we can have a strong intake of AI in Europe. The purpose of this legislation is not stifling innovation or stopping the adoption of AI systems, but rather building trust so that in our context, where consumers are heavily protected, where human rights are central, people can believe, because we have done our job as institutions, that this model will not be hindered by this disruptive technology, but rather it will be integrated in this model and will help develop our model of AI, which for sure integrates these dimensions that are crucial to the European model.
That's it for this episode. I'm your host, James Thomas. The upcoming episode will also be a special one. We'll talk about data privacy and digital security, and most importantly, we'll address the question that keeps us all awake at night. Should we accept cookies? This series is directed, written, and produced by Marta Rodriguez-Martinez, reporting from Strasbourg, France, for this episode. The theme music is by Leo Lebrun. Sound editing is by Christophe Pitiot, and sound mixing is by Mathieu Duchesne. Our editor-in-chief is Ali Issan Aden. If you aren't already, you can listen to the series on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Castbox, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're enjoying this podcast, please consider leaving us a positive review and, of course, sharing it. Thanks for listening.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.